ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 We shall read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Pure Devotional Service. Text 22. Please repeat. Well, to save time, I'll begin and then I'll ask you to repeat. Barhaite te nayane naranam lingani vishnor nadirikshato ye padoninam to drumachanma bhajo kshetraninanu vrajato haryo. Barhaite te nayane naranam lingani vishnor nanirikshato ye padoninam to drumajanma bhajo kshetraninanu vrajato haryo. Now repeat. Barhaite. Like plumes of a peacock.
Like plumes of a peacock.
Te.
Te.
Those.
Those.
Nayane.
Nayane.
Eyes.
Eyes.
Naranam.
Naranam.
Of men.
Of men.
Lingani.
Lingani.
Forms.
Forms.
Vishnu.
Vishnu.
Of the personality of Godhead.
Of the personality of Godhead.
Na.
Na.
Does not.
Does not.
Nirikshata.
Nirikshata.
Look upon.
Look upon.
Ye.
Ye.
All such.
All such.
Padao.
Padao.
Legs.
Legs.
Rinam.
Rinam.
Of men.
Of men.
Tao.
Tao.
Those.
Those.
Drumajanma.
Drumajanma.
Being born of the tree.
Being born of the tree.
Bhajao.
Bhajao.
Like that.
Kshetrani.
Holy places.
Holy places.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Anuvrajataha.
Anuvrajataha.
Goes after.
Goes after.
Hare.
Hare.
Of the Lord.
Of the Lord.
Yao.
Yao.
Which.
Which.
Translation. The eyes which do not look at the symbolic representations of the personality of Godhead Vishnu, his forms, name, quality, etc., are like those printed on the plumes of the peacock. And the legs which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered are considered to be like tree trunks. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Especially for the householder devotees, the path of deity worship is strongly recommended. As far as possible, every householder, by the direction of the spiritual master, must install the deity of Vishnu. Forms like Radha Krishna, Lakshmi Narayan, or Sita Ram especially, or any other form of the Lord, like Nrisimha, Varaha, Gaur Nitai, Matsya, Kurma, Shalagram Shila, and many other forms of Vishnu, like Trivikram, Keshava, Achuta, Vasudev, Narayan, and Damodar, as recommended in the Vaishnav Tantras or Puranas. And one's family should worship strictly following the directions and regulations of Archana Vidhi. Any member of the family who is above 12 years of age should be initiated by a bona fide spiritual master. And all the members of the household should be engaged in the daily service of the Lord, beginning from morning, 4 a.m., till night, 10 p.m., by performing Mangal Aratrika, Niranjana, Archana, Puja, Kirtana, Shringara, Bhoga Vaikali, Sandhya Aratrika, Pada, Bhoga at night, Sayana Aratrika, etc. Engagement in such worship of the deity under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master will greatly help the householders to purify their very existence and make rapid progress in spiritual knowledge. Simple theoretical book knowledge is not sufficient for a neophyte devotee. Book knowledge is theoretical, whereas the archana process is practical. Spiritual knowledge must be developed by a combination of theoretical and practical knowledge. And that is the guaranteed way for attainment of spiritual perfection. The training of devotional service for the neophyte devotee completely depends on the expert spiritual master who knows how to lead his disciple to make gradual progress toward the path back home, back to Godhead. One should not become a pseudo-spiritual master as a matter of business to meet one's family expenditures. One must be an expert spiritual master. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopajana Vallabha Ki Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Ki Jai. What should we do now? The class should go on. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has defined the bona fide qualities of a spiritual master. And one of the verses in that description reads, Shri Vigrahara Dana Nityanana Shingara Tanamandira Marjanado Yuktasya Bhaktamscha Niyunjatoki Vande Guru Sri Charanara Vindam. Shri Vigraha is the archa, or suitable worshipable form of the Lord. And the disciple should be engaged in worshipping the deity regularly by Shringara, by proper decoration and dressing, and also by Mandira Marjana, the matter of cleansing the temple, The spiritual master teaches the neophyte devotee all these kindly and personally to help him gradually in the realization of the transcendental name, quality, form, etc. of the Lord. Only attention engaged in the service of the Lord, especially in dressing and decorating the temple, accompanied by musical kirtan and spiritual instructions from scriptures, can save the common man from the hellish cinema attractions and rubbish sex songs broadcast everywhere by radios. If one is unable to maintain a temple at home, he should regularly go to another's temple where all the above performances are regularly executed. Visiting the temple of a devotee and looking at the profusely decorated forms of the Lord, well-dressed in a well-decorated sanctified temple, naturally infuse the mundane mind with spiritual inspiration. People should visit holy places like Vrindavan, where such temples and worship of the deity are specifically maintained. Formerly, all rich men like kings and rich merchants constructed such temples under the direction of expert devotees of the Lord, like the six Goswamis. And it is the duty of the common man to take advantage of these temples and festivals observed in the holy places of pilgrimage by following in the footsteps of great devotees, Anuvraja. One should not visit all these sanctified pilgrimage places and temples with sightseeing in mind, but one must go to such temples and sanctified places immortalized by the transcendental pastimes of the Lord and be guided by proper men who know the science. This is called Anuvraja. Anu means to follow. It is therefore best to follow the instructions of the bona fide spiritual master, even in visiting temples and the holy places of pilgrimage. One who does not move in that way is as good as a standing tree condemned by the Lord not to move. The moving tendency of the human being is misused by visiting places for sightseeing. The best purpose of such traveling tendencies could be fulfilled by visiting the holy places established by great acharyas, and thereby not being misled by the atheistic propaganda of money-making men who have no knowledge of spiritual matters. Translation again. The eyes which do not look at the symbolic representations of the personality of Godhead Vishnu, his forms, name, quality, etc., are like those printed on the plumes of the peacock. And the legs which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered are considered to be like tree trunks. Hare Krishna. So it's a great pleasure for me to be here in this beautiful temple, in this prestigious location. I first met Srila Prabhupada and the devotees in the Boston area. And at that time, I was a student at Brandeis University and was a psychology major. And one of the professors in the psychology department had invited Srila Prabhupada to speak at the university. At the end of the lecture, one of the devotees asked if anyone had a car and was driving to Harvard Square or Boston, because the devotees needed a lift. And I happened to have a station wagon. And so afterwards I introduced myself to the devotees. I said, yes, I could give you a ride to Harvard Square. So they all piled in the car. I don't even know how they all fit. But they really, they all squeezed in. And I had been looking for a guru seriously. And whenever I heard that a swami or yogi or master was anywhere within 1,000 miles, I would go to see him or hear him. But in each case, I was unsatisfied. There's quite a long list, and I could mention their names. Some of them are people you've probably heard of. And I could also say why I rejected them, or why I felt that this was not my perfect master. But I won't do that now. But in the car, I did take the opportunity to speak to one of the devotees. There's actually a lady devotee named Janava. And I was very impressed by her answers. I felt that she gave a better explanation of Zen Buddhism and, you know, Yogananda and different people I had been, different people and philosophies I've been reading about. And I felt that, you know, I must meet the guru. So, they invited me to the temple, which was at 95 Glenville Avenue in Alston. I took this verse talks about visiting holy places. So I began this morning at Brandeis University, visiting the auditorium where I first saw Srila Prabhupada and the devotees. And then from there we went to 95 Glenville Avenue in Alston, which was the first temple. And that was where I got to ask my question to Srila Prabhupada and became convinced that he was my perfect master. And then from there we went to 40 North Beacon Street in Brighton, which was the next temple after the storefront, 95 Glenville Avenue. That was a big house. And it's still there. And now I'm here where we have this amazing location. So this verse, which describes the process of deity worship, if you take it seriously, any member of the family who is above 12 years of age should be initiated by a bona fide spiritual master. And all the members of the household should be engaged in the daily service of the Lord, beginning from morning, 4 a.m., till night, 10 p.m., by performing Mangala Aritrika, Niranjana, Archana, Puja, Kirtana, Shringara, Boga, Vaikali, Sandhya Aritrika, Patha, Boga at night, Sayana Aritrika, etc. Now this program would keep a family busy all from morning till night. And by that engagement in the service of the Lord, one's attention would be engaged in the Lord's form, qualities, pastimes, and holy names. But when we hear this or read this, we might think, we are so busy with other engagements, how could we possibly do all this? Well, that's a good question. But Srila Prabhupada also gives a hint. If one is unable to maintain a temple at home, he should go to another's temple where all the above performances are regularly executed. So this is Srila Prabhupada's temple, and these services are being performed here. But although there's benefit to witnessing the worship performed by others, it's recommended that one engage in such worship oneself. And Asura Kulanasana Prabhu, you said you come and cook for the deities?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the idea, that we can come and serve the deity in the temple. And that will engage our senses in the Lord's service. The deity worship has been developed considerably. When I first joined the temple at 95 Glenville Avenue. Well, of course, the conditions were also different. It was a storefront, and the front was the temple, and then behind the temple was the kitchen, and there was a little toilet to the side. And then downstairs was the basement. And the devotees had gotten a used bathtub and propped it up on cinder blocks. And then there was like a basin. There's a, you know, a basement. You have like a sort of utility sink. And they hooked up a hose from the basin to run into the bathtub. And I guess, I don't really remember exactly what happened to the water after it bathed the devotees. I guess it must have been collected in some sort of buckets or something. And so, and I don't remember hot water. I do remember cold water. So it was, and then there was, yeah, and then there's this like a little curtain to partition that area off from the rest of the basement. And the devotees would just take turns standing in that bathtub and having their showers. And then we'd go to the temple room, and I believe Mangalarti was at about 6, which was, I mean, it took about that long just to get everyone ready. And but it was a very sweet worship, very sweet worship. And the devotees would go out early in the morning and collect flowers from the neighborhood and bring them to decorate the deities. And yeah, it was very nice, a lot of devotion. And the devotees would take turn cooking breakfast, which was usually some sort of porridge. And they would offer a portion of it to the deities. And we would get a little of that, which was called Mahaprasad, along with regular prasad. And I think we were trained to be scientific and, you know, test hypotheses. So, to me it tasted like the Mahaprasad, even though it was the exact same preparation from the same pot, that it tasted different from the rest of the prasad. But it seemed like it, but I wasn't completely sure. And we would like sit down on the floor and have breakfast together. All the meals were like that. And then one of the devotees said, it was Saradhya, she said to Satsvarupa, who was the temple president, did you ever notice that the Mahaprasad always tastes like it has a little sugar sprinkled all over it? Which was exactly what I was experiencing. So I thought, oh, it's real. Other people are also experiencing the same thing. Then the devotees needed, I guess it was a small group and there weren't many people joining, and they needed another pujari. I guess at that time you could worship the deity if you just had first initiation, so someone suggested that I could get initiated, then I could also help with the deity worship.
So, Satsvarupa wrote to Srila Prabhupada, and he accepted me as a disciple. And then I got to engage in that service. And it was amazing. I mean, when I first came to the temple, it seemed sort of odd. It was very foreign to my experience and culture. And, you know, we learned in the Ten Commandments, like, thou shalt not make graven images. And it just, the first time I really, I mean, I was intrigued. I mean, I liked everything else, but the deity worship is a little hard to relate to. But then I saw Satsvarupa do the deity worship, and he was like such a sober, pure-hearted, you know, intelligent and responsible person. So seeing him do it, I thought, you know, there must be something to it, not just like playing with dolls. At that time we didn't have Radhagopi Janavala, we just had like little brass deities. So then they taught me, and there was like so much reciprocation from the deity. It was amazing. I never would have imagined it. If I hadn't experienced it, I could never have imagined it. And it was a very, very personal relationship, very personal reciprocation. And then we moved to North Beacon Street. That was also, I mentioned it a little bit earlier on my pilgrimage, but I'll repeat it. So we had a lease for the storefront, which it was small. I mean, in a way it seemed big. It was like the whole spiritual world, but it was small. And devotees were looking for an alternative place, but they couldn't find one. And as I recall, the lease was due to expire on August 31st. Which happened to be a Friday. And Satsvarupa was just sort of resigned, well, we just have to renew it. And I said, well, it's, you know, it's Friday, and he won't know until midnight. I mean, technically, the landlord won't know until midnight whether we've renewed it or not. And if, you know, so it really won't matter until Monday. So let's just try. I mean, something inside of me just kept forcing me to keep looking. And then we found this big house, which had been a funeral, not just a funeral, I guess something like a funeral parlor. But they used to do embalming there. It was a whole operation. And it was for sale. So, you know, let's try. So, we made an appointment with, I guess, it was a combination of the real estate agent and the owner. And, you know, we went to their office. It was like a pretty plush office. But the guy, it looked like he'd been up all night, he wasn't sleeping much. And he had this ashtray filled with cigarette butts. And he wanted to smoke another cigarette. But he didn't have any. So he was sort of poking around the cigarette butts,
and found one that had more of the butt left. And he picked it out of the ashtray and lit it up. And I was thinking, you know, it's like, well, it's karma in a way. It's karma. Jesus, there's like a bum on the street. He's like well dressed in a nice suit and tie with this plush office and fancy furniture. And he's just picking out cigarette butts from the ashtray. But I also thought it's like how futile it all is. I mean, he's working hard. He hasn't slept much for whatever reason. And he's not able to enjoy. So we got the place. My father was a lawyer, but Srila Prabhupada knew. We were like completely inexperienced. But Srila Prabhupada said that we should like show the documents to my father, and if he approved, then we should go ahead and get it. So we, in those days there was no fax machines or any of those things. So it was either send it in the mail or telephone. So I think, you know, time was of the essence, so we phoned and read it to him. He approved, so we went ahead. And then we got Jagannath deities. We didn't have Jagannath deities in the storefront. And the morning program was very intense. By then, you know, it was more standard. Mangalarti was at 4:30, and just pretty much the way we have now. Although we had six classes every day, ISKCON was very much like an educational institution. And, so after Mangalarti, we'd read a verse from Ishopanishad. Srila Prabhupada said we should do that. And then, of course, we'd have the morning Bhagavatam class. Then in the late afternoon, before the Arti, we'd read the Nectar of Devotion, which had just come out. And then we'd have the regular Bhagavad Gita class. And then before taking rest, we'd read the Krishna book. So, yeah, like that, we'd read five, six scriptures every day. And then whatever else we did, it was sort of like the practical application of what we read in the books. So then Srila Prabhupada decided to return to India, and he wanted sort of like the number two person from each temple. So in Boston, Satsrupa was the temple president, and I was the treasurer, temple commander, and Sankirtan leader. So I was like number two. So I got to go. I mean, everyone, I think, wanted to go. Everyone was just dying to go to India. I got to go. And as I was leaving, I was just standing at the front door about to get a ride to the airport. The head pujari, Rukmini Devidasi, who's in the Washington, D.C. area now, she came running to me And she said that she had this feeling that Lord Jagannath was sending me to India. And I had had the exact same feeling, but I didn't say anything to anyone. But when she said it, I thought, wow, this is very interesting. She also got the same impression. So I went to India, and it's a long story. Eventually got the land in Juhu, built a temple, and someone brought me some Jagannath deities from Puri. I just kept them on my shelf, and I would, I'd look at them and I'd feel like I should do something for them, but I didn't know what. I mean, we had the deities on the altar and the worship was going on, and but this thought was there, I have to do something for them. And then finally, it came to me that we should have Rath Yatra. So we arranged a big Rath Yatra, really big. I mean, of course, Bombay is millions of people. And it was a very good route. And it was a great success. So afterwards, we thought, well, this is so good. We have the cart. We learned how to do the whole parade and the festival and the publicity. And we should just do this somewhere else. So we thought, well, Pune is nearby. We'll do the same thing in Pune. Yes. I think it was just after Prabhupada left. I think it was around 79. The Juga Temple opened January 14th, 1978. So maybe a year later, after the temple opened. No, I went to India, that was in October of 1970.
From Boston.
From Boston. Srila Prabhupada arrived from India in Boston, and I left from America to go to India from Boston. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for 1970 to 72, we're just traveling around India with Srila Prabhupada. And then 72, he got the Juhu land. There was some struggle there, and eventually we built the temple, and the temple opened January 14th, 19th. This is 2 months after Prabhupada left. Now, there was I don't know what to call him. He began as, I think he was first known as Pandit, then he was known as Acharya, and then he was known as Bhagavan. And he had a big ashram in Pune. And his philosophy was that you should not restrain your senses, and by indulging your senses, then naturally and eventually, you will become renounced. And Srila Prabhupada said, if that were the case, then the pig should become the greatest sannyasi. So what was happening, and I,
I was shocked because whenever we would visit the Grihasthas, they would always seem very pious and religious. But it turned out that some of the men of quite good families of Bombay, they were going to Pune on the weekend to have relations with the American and European and Australian ladies that were residents of the ashram and who were following that philosophy. So one of the wives of one of our good life members, who seemed to be a good life member, she complained to Srila Prabhupada. And she said, you know, what he's doing is terrible. He's breaking our families. You know, we have to do something. He said, don't worry. I will go to Pune and I will personally drive him out. So this is like a little background. So an advanced party from Bombay went to Pune to prepare for the Rath Yatra. And the newspapers were going back and forth between our devotees and this, by now they were calling him Bhagwan, and saying, the Hare Krishna devotees have come to do Rath Yatra festival. What do you have to say about them? And then this so-called Bhagavan, he would say very offensive things, like, basically, we don't know anything, and Swami Bhaktivedanta is just misleading us, and this is not real spiritual life. And, you know, and then they would come to us and say, you know, so-and-so said this, what do you have to say about that? So it was like good for the sales of the newspapers. But it wasn't good for the Bhagavan, because he was committing heavy offenses. And he became struck by some horrible disease. And it was such that he could not... It's like his whole body was on fire. And they had a lot of money. So they made like an underground, he couldn't tolerate any heat at all. They made like an underground residence for him, but it's like he couldn't get any escape. And he couldn't speak. His whole thing was speaking. I mean, of course, what he said, I think people just liked that idea that but, you know, he was sort of an orator. He was, you know, he couldn't speak. And then eventually it was time for the Rath Yatra, and I came. And, you know, a whole group of devotees from Bombay came. And the people from his ashram approached us that we can't stay here anymore. You know, our master is suffering. He can't take the climate here, and we want to leave. Would you like to buy the ashram? So, you know, okay, well, so I went to the ashram. It was a big place, you know. They had a lot of talented people, you know, good landscaping and a lot of nice, you know, plants and water features and different things. The atmosphere really seemed polluted. I mean, there was just so much sinful activity going on there. And, you know, they wanted a lot of money, and then we had just opened the Juhu Temple. Like, how would we manage it?
but, you know, sort of weighing it back and forth. And it was like they couldn't, he couldn't stay there. He couldn't stay there. And so eventually they took him somewhere else. I think they tried to take him to Gujarat, but they didn't want him in Gujarat. And I think they took him to Oregon or something. And I was thinking of Prabhupada's assurance to that distressed lady that, don't worry, I will go to Pune and I will drive him out. So, and the Rath Yatra was wonderful. Oh, it's just so nice. Thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of people. It's a nice long route. And I remember we had a good amplification from the chariot, so the vibration of the holy name was just reverberating. Some of the streets weren't that broad, and it was really wonderful. So yeah, Lord Jagannath is very powerful, and all the deities are. That was my experience with Lord Jagannath. And of course, we had our first Rath Yatra in Boston. It was, we had our little Jagannath deities, and we didn't have chariots, but we made palanquins, and it was a short route. We just took them from the temple. Maybe even drove them, but what I remember is like we carried them across a bridge across the Charles River. I thought that was like pretty nice. That was our little Rath Yatra. And then we were hearing news like they had this huge one in San Francisco. Like, amazing. So yeah, deities are very powerful. I told something in Hartford which led to a contribution from one of the members of the audience. And it's really for that contribution that I want to tell the story. But when we opened the temple in Juhu, one of our life members, a very intelligent person, quite a good friend of Srila Prabhupada, he had been the wealthiest man in Pakistan before partition. And he was married to our Dean Birla's daughter. And in fact, after the partition, his home was taken for Muhammad Ali Jinnah. But anyway, so he told Srila Prabhupada that if you want to get a lot of money in the donation box, in the kundi, you have to have your pujaris tell stories about all the people who put money in the box and then they got great boons. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, this is against our principles. We don't make business with our God. But a lot of people do have that mentality, especially some deities are known to give abundant rewards to their donors. So I said that, you know, we don't make business with our God, you know, but some people do. And then I told this sort of a joke I heard in India, that a man was, he was going to bet on the horses. So he went to the deity and said, you know, I'm going to bet on this horse,
And if I win 100,000 rupees, I'll give you 50,000. So he made the deal, and then he bet on his horse. But he didn't win 100,000. He only won 50,000. So he went back to the deity, and he said, "Lord, you didn't trust me. You took your half first." So you know, I'm saying not only do they make business with the Lord, they also try to cheat the Lord. So then one lady who was at the program said that her brother or uncle, someone, had done something similar, had gone to the deity of Balaji, the Tirupati, and said he was going to make an investment. Do you remember the details? Something like, I was going to make an investment in some business transaction, and he said that if this is successful, I will give you my gold ring. So he made the investment and it was successful. But, you know, he thought, I don't even know what he thought, but he just never went back. He just, you know, he made his money and he was making more money and more money and more money. He just didn't feel the need to go back. So then someone told him, you know, you made this promise to the deity. You know, you better fulfill it. He said, well, you know, that was like 12 years ago. And the price of gold has gone up a lot in 12 years. It's a true story. So I'm not going to give that ring, but I'll calculate the value of that gold then, and I'll give that much. So that was his idea. So he went to Balaji, and you know, they have this like big sacks. So he calculated what the gold was worth back then, and he put that much money in the sack. And as he was dropping the money in the sack, his ring fell in the sack along with the money. So it's like, that was the Lord's mercy, made him true to his word. He took the payment with interest. So yeah, that was good. But yeah, the Lord is very intelligent. There are many verses how if someone comes to the Lord with material desires, he may fulfill their desires, but only if it will not cause them to come back again and again to petition for more material things. And he says that if someone does come to me for something material, he's a foolish person, murka, because instead of asking for nectar, amrit, he's actually asking for poison. But I am not a fool, murka, like him. And I will deal with him in such a way that I will force him to drink that nectar, and then he will forget about those poisonous things. So yeah, Krishna is a person. He's real, and he reciprocates with his devotees in different ways. And we should take the opportunity to serve him personally through all these different processes. Cooking for him, cleaning the temple, offering arti, or just, you know, offering prayers, singing kirtan. And yeah, it will please him, and it will, bring us closer to him, which is our goal. Hare Krishna. So, do you have any questions or comments? Yes.
Yes, I have a question. I'd like to know, I'm very curious to know, what were your experiences when you were caring for the deities? What personal reciprocation did you get in the beginning of your journey with Krishna?
Well, the reciprocation is a little hard to describe because it's very personal. But in the most simple terms, the deities, little Radha Krishna deities, they revealed themselves to be persons. And so when I would do something with them, for them, with devotion, and everything I did, I tried to do with devotion, and they would, it seemed to me that they were like smiling upon me and glancing upon me and exuding some sort of pleasure. And that, in turn, gave me pleasure. We'd get up, it would be dark, and, you know, we'd have our cold shower and go out into the neighborhood under the cover of dark and pick the flowers, but we're collecting these flowers for Radha Krishna. You know, the whole thing was for them. It wasn't like a duty, like mechanical, we have to do it because someone told us, but it was really, oh, this is for Radha Krishna.
There's a psychological state.
Well, yeah, I would say, I mean, it depends. Were you here when I spoke about that the Mahaprasad, the food that was offered to the deities, tasted different from the rest of the food in the same pot? Earlier I mentioned that it was especially in the morning because all the devotees would be present for breakfast. So someone would cook some porridge in a large pot, and then out of that pot, they would put some in small bowls for the deities. Yeah. So that was something that it wasn't just me who experienced it, but others experienced it. And so that reciprocation with the deity is something we experience because we were not, like I said, we weren't born into this culture. We weren't doing it because we were expected to do it. But we felt something from doing it, and that inspired us to continue doing it. Yeah, and Srila Prabhupada explained that an idol means worshipping something as God, which is not God. Like in the Bible, they have the story of the golden calf. They worshipped the golden calf, but it wasn't God. But he explained that the deity is God. It's not an idol in the sense of worshipping something which is not God as God, but it actually is God.
So it's not really a violation of the biblical commandment if you understand it properly and do it properly.
I have the same cultural upbringing, and I find the philosophy and tradition to be very good, but I still have difficulties with these problems.
Well, okay. All right. But you don't have a difficulty with chanting. Okay. Well, you don't have difficulty coming here. You don't have difficulty with prasad. So just start. You know, just start from where you can and go from there. Yes.
I wonder, Prabhu, with your association with Prabhupada and being in Boston, coming from Boston, did he share, do you have any particular vision or idea for the Boston Temple and the role either in Boston or in the United States?
Well, you know, Boston is a center of learning, and I should mention this also. This was very significant. You know, I joined when Srila Prabhupada was in Boston, and he was aware of me from our interactions. But you know, he left and I was under the local authorities. But then he wanted someone to place his books in bookstores. And somehow they thought of me. And I remember I went to the Harvard Co-op, or the Harvard Coop, as they used to call it. And they took a huge order. And there were other bookstores in the area. And Prabhupada was really pleased, you know, with the results. And I think that was the first time, other than like our personal interactions, and then like I drove the devotees, then I started to drive him. But that was the first time I did service in separation that was recognized by him. And then later a devotee told me that he had gotten a book at another bookstore at Harvard Square at a period where he calculated, I didn't do the calculation, but he calculated that it must have been a book that I put in that bookstore. And then he bought that book and he became a devotee. So I think, you know, books are very important, you know. Festivals. I mean, there's just, you know, visiting Brandeis today and just seeing, just so there's like, it'd be very easy to gradually introduce Krishna consciousness. In our day, I mean, it's still possible now, but in our day, you know, like we could hear the truth and then that was it. We just left everything and surrendered. Now it might be a more gradual process, which requires, you know, patience and perseverance. But yeah, I mean, the other realization I had was, because at the, okay, so we went to 40 North Beacon Street. That has become a healing center for, you know, people with substance abuse problems or mental problems. And the people who were sort of administrating the place and taking care of the patients, they were like very nice people. They're very interested. We gave them a couple of small books. And I just realized that whatever field a person is in, if Krishna consciousness was added to it, it would be the perfection of that field. So whatever field we all are in, we can approach people in the same field with Krishna consciousness. But I think, you know, universities, they're sort of, in principle, looking for the truth, open to new ideas. So that's sort of natural. People who deal with health care, end of life care, they are sort of naturally open, but it can really be anywhere. So, yeah, like Yari Deke Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh, wherever you go, wherever you meet, just repeat the message of Krishna. And we can give them books. You know, we can say something, but we can give them books. When I was in the Washington, D.C. area, you know, I was going to different places with His Holiness Ratatpaja Swami, and he had like a big box of books in the trunk of his car, like 240 copies of The Perfection of Yoga. And we would just give out these books whenever we could, you know. I mean, there were two of us, so he'd say, you know, my friend and I teach yoga and meditation. We focus more on the meditational part, and here's a small book about yoga, and, you know, if you'd like to read it, and you might say that it, you know, it helps you to calm your mind so you can, you know, go deeper into your heart and find God in your heart or pray to God from your heart, and it was good. Or another one is, you know, Beyond Birth and Death. It's a little book. And we didn't do this one when we were together, but he said sometimes he'll say to people, do you believe in reincarnation? So there's usually three answers, either yes, no, or I'm not sure. So he said, if you get a yes, they say, oh, well, you'll really like this book. And if they say, I'm not sure, say, oh, this is just the book for you. And if they say no, then, well, it might be a little more challenging. And another one is, like, sometimes they'll say to you, how are you doing? You know, it's sort of courtesy, you know, how's your day going or whatever. So you say, do you really want to know? And then he would say, I am trapped in a body that is subject to birth, disease, old age, and death. And I'm not doing very well at all. And I don't think anyone in a material body is doing very well. But
The good news is there's an escape route that he comes out with beyond birth and death. So, yeah, there's scope. Yes.
From the time that you went to India first time.
Yes.
Until today, comparing the development of Krishna consciousness in those two countries, and at the same time, maybe not political, but the change, the economical change. How would you compare the expansion or success of Krishna consciousness in both countries from the time that the first time you started, you know, the book distribution centers and so on, until today?
That's a very interesting question. And the answer might seem paradoxical. Because when I first left America to go to India, ISKCON was booming. I mean, we were opening temples, devotees were joining. It was a tremendous expansion. And when we got to India, it was hard. People didn't know us. And yeah, I mean, Prabhupada impressed them and we impressed them, but still, they didn't know if we would last, you know, or if it was just a fad. And then there were people like the communists who made a lot of propaganda against us because they just didn't want us to flourish. So they started rumors that we're CIA and all sorts of things. Yeah, it was really... So now we have like so many huge temples in India and hundreds of thousands of people are coming and donating profusely, and in that way, like, the temples in India are really flourishing. And the ones in America, generally not as much as they were during Prabhupada's time. But the general culture of America has been uplifted a lot by Krishna consciousness. Things that when Prabhupada first came were considered very strange, like concepts like karma, reincarnation, even vegetarianism, they're very common now. So even though our temples may not be flourishing that much, but the movements has had a great influence on the general society. And we see it just all the people we meet, you know, and they're very open. They're very open. And in India, although our temples are flourishing and a lot of people are connected with ISKCON and they are becoming Krishna conscious, but the Western materialistic influence in India is terrible. I mean, you know, I go to Bombay, some of the advertising I see, it's worse than America. And I've heard from people like in colleges there, the things that go on in colleges are worse than in America. So it's sort of paradoxical that it's generally, I would say, the temples are not flourishing as much in a way as they were when Prabhupada was here, but the influence is changing the society for the better. And in India, the temples are flourishing, and certainly there are millions of people, but it's a huge country, and the materialistic propaganda is and allurements are really making people crazy there. So, but whatever it is, we have to do our best. We have to do our best. Like in one lecture,
Srila Prabhupada gave the example of Jatayu. Do you know who Jatayu was? In the pastimes of Lord Rama. Do you know anything about the story of Rama and Sita and Ravana? So when Ravana kidnapped Sita, he was like taking her by force to Lanka. And Jatayu, he was like a very powerful bird, vulture, I think. But he was very old. But he saw that Ravana is abducting Mother Sita. I must try to save her. But he actually knew he couldn't, because Ravana was extraordinarily powerful. And he was just old. He was just very old. But still, he gave his life trying to rescue her. And when Rama was searching through the forest looking for Sita, he came upon Jatayu. And he embraced him. And he said, "You are more dear to me than my own father." And he gave up his life in Lord Rama's arms. And Lord Rama did the funeral rites for him, just like a son would do for a father. So Srila Prabhupada told the story to say that sometimes the material forces may be too powerful for us to defeat. But, you know, if we give our life for the cause of the Lord, He'll reciprocate, whether externally or materially we're successful or not. That's one of the most moving parts of the story of Lord Ramachandra. Yes?
Could you tell us a little bit what Sastra Maharaj was like in the early days when he was visiting?
Well, he was like our father. You know, he was older than we were. We were, you know, 18, 20, and he was 27 or something. So he was, and he had a job. I mean, none of us had jobs. So he was like our father, you know. It was such a treat, you know, to be with him in the morning. And, you know, he was so dutiful. He would take his turn cooking the porridge just like everyone else. He'd take his turn worshiping the deities. And then he'd go, and we were like, you know, it wasn't the same without him. And then when he'd come back from, he worked for the welfare department, then when he came back in the evening, we were all so happy. And then he'd go out. He'd go out and chant in the streets. Yeah. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. I remember, I mean, so many little exchanges, but one that just comes to mind, I don't know why, I was thinking, I was just feeling like very wretched somehow, and then thinking of Rupa Goswami, I don't even know where the idea of Rupa Goswami came from, but I said, you know, I feel so wretched, I think it like, Rupa Goswami must really, not, I didn't say he was, must be disgusted by me, but just sounds like I just feel so wretched and I don't know, you know. And he said, no, he thinks you're nice and you should come and be with him. Yes.
Is there some story about you that either you or Vijayanarmaj ran away from the temple or something and went into the palms, and then one of you went and found them or something like that? Or I heard some story like this a long time ago, but it may not have been you, but
Yeah, I didn't hear that. But yeah, we would go. I mean, yeah, I don't remember it quite like that. I mean, there might be some truth to it. I mean, I know once. Yeah, but I couldn't say. Yeah. Any other?
Question.
Oh, yes.
Thank you for your wonderful talk. I wanted to know what one personality, and I was going to do a talk of today. And I heard some consciousness here too, but especially you were also present in another talk in 1974 and 1976. In Jindu. So Prabhupada was so compassionate to him, even though he was sometimes very offensive. I don't know what happened to him. He has he was only available to Krishna consciousness, and when he later on became a devotee, he was no longer a Krishna consciousness.
Well, I'm not sure how much time we have. I could give.
We have time to take Mark.
We do have prasadam because then the curtains are going to open.
Wait.
Okay.
What did you say?
Ours is 8:30. So a lot of devotees wish to do have prasadam, and the curtains are going to be closed. So have prasadam after the RSC.
When's the RT?
8:30.
Until when?
8:45.
Oh, that's
Sure.
Well, we can take a vote, but I would say I could speak about Dr. Patel until the 8:30 RT. Then we can join the RT for 15 minutes, and then we can have prasad.
Okay.
Is that all right? Okay. So Dr. Patel was he was a little proud person because he had studied medicine in England, which was quite rare back then. But more than that, he had maintained his principles, and he knew Sanskrit. But he had some relationship with Srila Prabhupada. Every morning he would accompany Srila Prabhupada on his walk at Juhu Beach, and they would talk. But one morning, and you know, they would go back and forth, and it was very interesting and instructive, but sometimes annoying also. But one morning, Dr. Patel was praising one of the so-called revered saintly persons of India. And Srila Prabhupada, he could not just let it go. And, you know, he said, you know, namam duskritana mudha prapadyante naradama, like, anyone who doesn't surrender to Krishna is a duskritana, you know, fool, rascals, demon, like that. And Dr. Patel, he just got so upset. He just got so upset. And Prabhupada, he was saying, you can't say that about him. And Prabhupada was saying, I'm not saying Krishna's saying, I'm just repeating what Krishna said. You can't say that about him. And Dr. Patel really got angry. I never saw him get so angry. And Prabhupada also got angry. And Dr. Patel was a leader of like a group of cronies. And, you know, But even they were trying to intervene, and they were saying, Swamiji has a heart condition, don't upset him. And they were like trying to pull him away. And it was really terrible. Finally, like they... And it was like in the boxing ring, you know, the bell rings. It's like it's over, but they're still like bashing each other. The referee and the two parties are trying to separate them. So then, afterwards, Tamal Krishna Goswami went up to Srila Prabhupada's room and he said, "Why, you know, why do you entertain him? You know, and what is his position? You know, because sometimes Prabhupada would say you're a Mayavadi, and Dr. Patel would say, no, sir, I'm a Vaishnav." So it was like hard to know what is his position. So when Tamal Krishna Goswami asked him, Srila Prabhupada said, "There was once a man who could speak perfectly in many different languages. And no one knew what his actual native tongue was. And everyone was speculating. So then finally one person said, I'll find out. So once, when the man wasn't looking, that other person came from behind and gave him a big whack. And then he started to curse in his native language. And then they found out. So Srila Prabhupada said that Dr. Patel was like that. He could speak expertly in many different ways. But when we actually hit him where it hurt, his real language came out. So then Tamal Krishna Goswami said, "But if that's the case, then why do you entertain him so much?" And Srila Prabhupada replied, "We have to engage everyone." So, Dr. Patel, he was very impressed by us when we first came. And he, although he's a proud man, he saw we're just like living in a hut and not even sleeping on the terraces of the neighbors' buildings. And so he took up a collection. He went to MJ Market in Bombay and he begged for cotton and cloth, and he had some mattresses made and pillows and mosquito nets and blankets. And he brought 12 sets. It was like enough for all the devotees. And then as time passed, you know, one pillow was missing, two blankets were missing, And as the years passed, everything disappeared. There was like not one thread left from this hard-earned donation. So on a morning walk, he complained to Srila Prabhupada that nothing was left. And Srila Prabhupada said, "Do you know why nothing is left? Because these devotees don't care for material comforts. As long as they can chant the holy name and serve their spiritual master, they're satisfied. They're all liberated. That mukti which you are so eager to get, they already have that mukti. And that's why they don't care for these things." So they had quite a relationship. Dr. Patel would come, and sometimes he would speak to Prabhupada in Gujarati, which Prabhupada didn't know, but he could understand. And then he would reply in Bengali, which Dr. Patel didn't know, but he could understand. And according to Dr. Patel, Srila Prabhupada told him that in their past lives they were brothers, and that's why they were so close. But after Prabhupada left, you know, Dr. Patel was very much feeling his separation. And he wrote an article about his association with Srila Prabhupada that was published in Back to Godhead. It was a beautiful article. Beautiful article. And the title was something like Prabhupada calls Bombay Doctor Fool and he loves it. That was like the title of the article. And it was a very nice article. And he even after Prabhupada left, he kept his routine. He'd come every morning. He'd go for his walk, and then after his walk, like when Prabhupada was here, he'd escort him, and Prabhupada would greet the deities. So he would still go for his walk, and then he'd come back, and he would come for deity greeting every morning and offer a flower to Prabhupada. So he was definitely blessed by Prabhupada's mercy. Hare Krishna. Oh, yeah. There was one other big... Well... So after that episode, Prabhupada said, all right, now no more discussion. We'll just read Krishna book on the morning walk. And for the first time in years, Dr. Patel didn't come. And it was like it seemed like it was over. And Prabhupada was walking the one direction near the ocean. Dr. Patel was walking the other direction from near the land, near the houses. And the way Dr. Patel describes it, like he had no intention of going to Prabhupada, but something in his heart just made him, and he just went to Prabhupada and he touched his feet and he said, Prabhupada, please forgive me, but I've been taught from my childhood to respect all the accredited saints of India. And Prabhupada said, yes. And I have been taught to say who is a saint and who is not a saint. But after that, they were friends again. Let's see. Oh, Nelson? Okay.
So, how are you? Yeah, and I can speak. So, everything. So this is the first book called Watering the Sea. This book has various anecdotes and different instructions Srila Viraj Maharaj received from Srila Prabhupada. There are personal exchanges. There are some lectures also by him, by Srila Prabhupada. So this was the first book he wrote. This is the second book he wrote called The Many Moons. Srila Prabhupada said that this movement will give this world many moons. Many new like the world. So this book is entitled Reflections of Departed Vaishnavas. Balakrishna Maharaj, Bhakti Swarupa Damodar Maharaj, Sridhar Maharaj, Bhakti Deepa Maharaj. So these are Veera Swami's reflections and his associations with these saintly devotees and anecdotes of those. And this is the latest book called Life's Final Exam. I think this is an exam we all have to take at some point. So this is a book, it's a compilation of different articles from different devotees about death and dying and taking care of terminally ill devotees or family members and how do we prepare ourselves for that. So there's one article by him about his relationship with his mother and father, the way they were getting ready to leave their body. There are articles by Rukhsa Prabhu and Bhakti Deepa Swami about death and dying. So this is also a very nice book, this book. And Maharaj will be happy to sign these books for anyone who will purchase them. They're $20 each. My wife, Lolita, has a table outside. You can purchase the book and bring it to Maharaj during Prashadam time and we'll be happy to sign it. So thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandini.